Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand.
That, as many of you know, was NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick on not standing for the national anthem before his team's preseason games this summer. And we begin today with that and with a question. What do the American flag and the Star Spangled Banner mean to you? And what does it mean to you when someone refuses to stand for the national anthem? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I ask because I think it means different things to Kaepernick than it does to his critics. No one seemed to take notice the first few times Kaepernick sat, but over the weekend someone did and asked him about it, and Kaepernick said it was a protest over ongoing oppression in this country.
There's a lot of things that need to change. One specifically is police brutality. There's people being murdered unjustly and not being held accountable. Cops are getting paid leave for killing people. That's not right. That's not right by anyone's standards.
It's such a mild protest, really, not standing. He didn't call a news conference or issue a press release or announce that he wasn't going to stand to draw attention to himself and his political views. He didn't get in anybody's face. He just quietly sat on the bench during the song and then went about his business on the field until the media started asking questions after preseason game number 3 last week. The most surprising thing to me about his comments was how he specifically called for more training for police officers.
There's things we can do to, you know, hold them more accountable, make those standards higher. You have people that practice law and are lawyers and go to school for 8 years, but you can become a cop in 6 months and don't have to have the same amount of training as a cosmetologist. That's insane. I mean, someone that's holding a curling iron has more education and more training than people that have a gun and are going out on the street to protect us.
So that was interesting, calling for more training for police officers relative to cosmetologists. It isn't exactly the Communist Manifesto, right? But predictably, Kaepernick has been getting waves of criticism and waves of support since this came to light. You can call in and take a side if you like. But for this show, I'm not so interested in Kaepernick good versus Kaepernick bad, which can be predictable and boring. I'm more interested in what do the American flag and the Star Spangled Banner mean to you? What does it have to do with sporting events? And what does it mean to you when someone refuses to stand for the national anthem? Also, anyone in law enforcement want to call in and talk about how much training you think new officers need? Does Kaepernick have a point about that? How about anyone in cosmetology? Do you need more training than a cop? 212-433-WNYC. But seriously, anyone in law enforcement, maybe you want to address that specific point. How much training is needed compared to what's typical for police forces today? But besides the thing about police officer training, what I find interesting about Kaepernick and his critics, and this is really the heart of the question that I'm asking, is how they're speaking about two entirely different subjects. Kaepernick hears the anthem, and he thinks about the state of the union as a whole. He's sitting because to him, the country as a whole is imperfect enough that cops are unjustifiably killing people and getting away with it. His critics hear the anthem, and what they think about, apparently, is Americans who got killed in a war. Kaepernick didn't say anything against soldiers or veterans or U.S. foreign policy. He's talking about domestic civil rights and police-community relations. But listen to Buffalo Bills coach and former Jets coach Rex Ryan.
You know, I have great respect for men and women that have fought for this country. I have family. I have friends that have gone and fought for this country. And they fight for freedom. They fight for the people.
Sorry, that's the wrong clip. That's Kaepernick. We'll get back to that later. Can we cue up A6, Rex Ryan? So here is the former Jets coach, now Buffalo Bills coach, Rex Ryan, reacting to Kaepernick.
People should protest if they feel that something is wrong, but not standing up for the Star Spangled Banner is the wrong way to protest. That flag represents all of us.
Sorry, we're having a little problem with the clips here. That obviously was Chuck Schumer. Let's see if we can get that Rex Ryan clip, the former Jets coach and Buffalo Bills coach. All right, now it looks like it's A4. You see it in there? Let's hear Rex Ryan if we have it.
The opportunity that we have to play a great game is through the men and women that are serve our country, and I think that's an opportunity right there just to show respect. And I think that's why when you see our team, every one of us are on that line.
So that's Ryan. And listen to NFL player Alex Boone, who was a teammate of Kaepernick's for 3 years, on the same note.
That flag gives you the right to do whatever you want. But at the same time, you have to show some respect, especially in this position that we're in, where we're playing a game for a living. And, you know, it's almost like disrespectful to, you know, you see all these pictures of these veterans that have no legs and they're standing up in their wheelchair. You know, and I had a brother that served and he lost friends, and I know how much it means to him. And it's shameful.
So for both of them, it's about the veterans and it's about the war dead. You know, Jake Tapper from CNN tweeted a critical response from a Gold Star mom who wrote that, quote, "My son's body lay in a street after an IED blew up the vehicle he was fighting in. He died protecting the ideals of the flag you refuse to respect," unquote, from that Gold Star mom. And that got retweeted 12,000 times. And that's the disconnect that I find interesting. I don't see the mom's name in the tweet, or I'd say it to honor her family, but with the ultimate respect to the Gold Star mom and her family's ultimate sacrifice, she and Colin Kaepernick, Rex Ryan and Colin Kaepernick, see the flag and hear the national anthem and think about different things. The mom says her son died protecting the ideals of the flag you refuse to respect. Kaepernick thinks he is respecting those ideals precisely by calling out the state, country, for failing to live up to them. They could actually find a lot of common ground on the ideals, perhaps. But to Kaepernick's critics, somehow sitting during the anthem is spitting on our war dead rather than making the social critique that he's making. Based on his statements, he had no intent to spit on the war dead. It wasn't even one of the issues he was thinking about. And once he saw what the response to his sitting for the national anthem was, he addressed that issue.
You know, I have great respect for men and women that have fought for this country. I have family. I have friends that have gone and fought for this country. And they fight for freedom. They fight for the people. They fight for liberty and justice for everyone. And that's not happening. I've seen videos. I've seen circumstances where men and women that have been in the military have come back and been treated unjustly by the country they fought for and have been murdered by the country they fought for on our land. That's not right.
His critique is domestic. So, listeners, what do the American flag and the Star Spangled Banner mean to you? And what does it mean to you when someone refuses to stand for the national anthem? 212-433-WNYC. One other element is that the critics of Kaepernick I've seen in the media tend to be white. So for yourself, listeners, do you think your racial background or the history of race in America informs how you see the flag, what you're thinking about when you hear the national anthem, things like that? And while your calls are coming in, we'll talk to Morgan Jenkins, who has an article in Rolling Stone now called "What Colin Kaepernick's National Anthem Protest Tells Us About America." Morgan, thanks so much for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
And I see you point out that while black men make up only 6% of the U.S. population, they comprise a staggering 70% of NFL rosters. Do you think that's important context for discussing Kaepernick sitting?
Absolutely. I think we need to think about disproportionate amounts of power here. So you're in the NFL and you're watching all of these black men play in football. But yet, as I say in my article, a lot of them don't even occupy managerial roles. There are no African-American majority owners of any NFL teams. There are no vice presidents or CEOs. And I think that's what I think Colin is mindful of, all of these systemic inequalities that are happening both on the field and outside of it. And I think it's incredibly important.
And you point out that the NFL fan base is 83% white. And 64% male. I'll add that's why Donald Trump doesn't want the presidential debates on TV opposite football games. He wants he wants that potentially friendly audience. But you publish those stats. So how do you see the white fan base's relationship to the black players in racial terms, if you do?
So when I think about football in terms of like the racial background, it just seems like black men are seen virtually for entertainment, and that's it. So you're watching football and you're seeing majority African-American males run and tackle and throw each other and show all of this immense aggression and strength on the field. And that's okay there because it's contained. It's within a certain time frame and it's a game. But when they start to talk about the violence that they feel as black men inhabiting those bodies outside of the field, whether being targeted by the police, whether experiencing racism both overtly and covertly, then that's all of a sudden a problem because they're not entertainment anymore. And you have to remind yourself that they're not just NFL players. They are also human beings, black males in America. And I don't know if people really want – I don't know if some people are that comfortable with seeing that complexity and identity.
Do you think the relationship with – sports with mostly white players is different, like hockey or, you know, tennis and golf have very few blacks. Baseball has very few blacks. And if player, do you think largely white audiences see those players differently? Like if a white player stood up and said something on a hockey rink, that it would be received differently?
It might. I think when I think about Colin and his political statement, I'm also thinking about many other black NFL players who have done something that was outside the norm of their behavior, that being respectable, being very modest in tone. For instance, if you think about Marshawn Lynch, when he did not want to do any interviews and he went to the interview and he said, "I'm just here so I don't get fired." Or when you saw Richard Sherman, when he was going against Crabtree and he was very, very passionate about it and people were really upset about it. It was like, well, all this adrenaline's pumping and he's on the field and he's celebrating a victory. How did you not expect for this to sort of pour over into who he really is? And so do I think that we would perhaps esteem white hockey players differently in terms of their aggression vis-a-vis black men's aggression? Absolutely. And that's an historical fact.
And you bring in your article the history of Muhammad Ali's Vietnam War protest, the Tommy Smith and John Carlos Black Power salute at the 68 Olympics, some WNBA players recently wearing Black Lives Matter T-shirts, LeBron James wore an I Can't Breathe T-shirt and came out in hoodies. So there's a historical context for Kaepernick as you see it.
Absolutely, because Muhammad Ali, in his time, when he decided that he was not going to fight in the Vietnam War, he was criticized by both black and white people for disrespecting the flag, disrespecting the nation's creed, bringing down the morale of African Americans who are fighting abroad. And so it makes me wonder if now we look at Colin, who right now there are a lot of people who are condemning him, both white and black people as well. And I'm wondering, many decades later, are we going to say that, are we going to revere him for what we're now condemning him for? I mean, it remains to be seen.
It is funny that history tends to look back more fondly on many civil rights protests that the present treats more harshly at the time. And, of course, Ali, case in point, those other ones, case in point, too. Do you think the answer to my call-in question about what the flag and the anthem mean to people tends in general to break differently in any way along racial lines?
Absolutely. I mean, growing up, I never heard of any polarizing opinions about the flag, the national anthem, or even Independence Day celebrations from anyone who was not from a marginalized background. So what I mean by that, it was always black people, people identify as Latinx background, those who are a part of the LGBT community, those are the ones who I usually hear having these polarizing issues. I've never heard of anyone who saw the other side of it by saying, you know what, I don't know if it really stands for what it stands for all people. I've never heard that from someone who was white. And that's just my observation. That's just my experience.
How about for you, before we bring in some callers, what are the American flag and the Star Spangled Banner mean to you? And what does it mean to you when someone refuses to stand for the national anthem?
Okay, so ideally and theoretically, I believe in the American flag. I believe in America's greatness. But given the the political climate that we're in right now, given all of the Black Lives Matter movements that are, you know, expanding both domestically and internationally, it's hard for me to look at the flag with the same reverence as maybe someone who is not of the same racial background as me. So if I saw someone who was not standing for the national anthem like Colin, my first, just thinking about it, I would immediately think that person is a person of color or someone of a marginalized background. And if he or she decided not to do that, then I would say I could understand. I wouldn't feel confused. Now, if I saw a white person that did not stand for the national anthem, I'd be like, I wonder why. That would be a lot more enigmatic to me from my reference point.
Mm-hmm. Given history.
Absolutely.
So let's take some calls. My guest is Morgan Jenkins, who has an article in Rolling Stone now called What Colin Kaepernick's National Anthem Protest Tells Us About America. My question to all of you, what do the American flag and the Star Spangled Banner mean to you, and what does it mean to you when someone refuses to stand for the national anthem, as 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick has been doing? Is this all about the military to you? Is that really the first thing that you think of, the only thing that you think of when you're hearing the national anthem or if somebody's protesting during the national anthem? Deborah in Bed-Stuy, you're on WNYC. Hey, Deborah, thanks for calling.
Hi, it's Deborah. And I am a Vietnam-era veteran, but I went into the military as the daughter of a lifer, so I knew what I was getting into, mm-hmm. and I had a specific purpose of getting education funds. So I stood and did what I needed to do, made the pledge. But I hadn't done that with that exception since before I graduated from high school, which was in 1970, I graduated.
Why, in your case?
Because in my experience as an African-American woman and my understanding in depth of the history of this country, I'm not talking about that tap they teach in the books, but the real history of what actually happened to people here, I don't find that lives up to the ideals of what the flag and our Constitution and Bill of Rights stand for. And maybe it's because you kind of, when you start to get into your teens and you start to define for yourself what matters and who you are and what's important, I looked around and remember this was when all the revolutions were taking place in the cities. I looked around and I had people, white people, asking me, a 13-year-old, you know, like, why are your people acting this way? And I'm like, what? Did they not take any history courses and know about the riots in New York City that were bigger than the ones in the 1860s, that were bigger than the ones in the 1960s?
The mostly white draft riots.
You know, that's the history that I'm talking about.
Deborah, I'm going to leave it there and get some other folks on, but thank you for starting us off. Morgan, do I hear you trying to get in there?
Yeah, I'm actually blown away. I mean, just by hearing this other perspective, because I mean, sometimes even when we discuss these opinions about the flag and what it stands for, even in the African American opinion, it can be an intergenerational difference, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
My stepfather, he's also a veteran, and he was in Desert Storm. He passed, sadly, but he had a lot of reverence for what America represents. But we would always get into topics about race, and it never felt like he was so staunch in support for America that he couldn't understand. Also, as a man who was born in the 1950s, a man who was also, you know, educated at Harvard, when he would go somewhere, someone would snap his fingers and call him boy. So it's like there's this cognitive dissonance that is going on when it's like you want to have respect for the American ideal, but as a marginalized person, as a person who is systemically oppressed, what does that look like in your day-to-day life? And I think that is what Colin was trying to touch upon.
Karen in West Milford, you're on WNYC. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yes, I think not standing for the flags or national television in sports event, it could. I think there's a time and place for everything, and I think it could send mixed messages. And, you know, just thinking about the children in our country and people watching that, I don't know if everyone understood it. I guess they sort of did, but my feeling of standing up for the American flag and, you know, saying the Pledge of Allegiance in school every day, it's for the people that fight for our country. It's for the people that protect us. It allows us the freedoms that we have today. I was brought up to respect the people that defend us and make the country what we are. Nowhere is perfect. I mean, nowhere. But I think where we are living in this country is the best place in the world you possibly can live. And I just think there's a time and a place for everything. And doing that, sending that message to the young children in our country, I don't think it was the right thing to do. There was a place and time for that.
He might argue,
I don't think that was right.
He might argue that starting these kinds of conversations in front of kids about justice in America is exactly what he wants to do and exactly what he thinks would be productive. And rather than just soiling something or,
right.
You know, what is the danger to the kids in having this conversation start in front of them as you see it, Karen?
Yes. And I'm a mother of a six-year-old. So, you know, I'm trying to hide her from the media and television and everything that's going on and the terrorism and everything else.
Yes.
I just think that we have to stand together and stick together. And I was just very, very appalled. First time I ever called the radio station. So,
and I really appreciate it, and I hope it won't be the last time. But what are they in the same? Why are they in the same category for you? Like protecting them from your kids, from carnage, in terrorism. Why is that in the same category as protecting them? Or why is this in the same category as that? Protecting them from Kaepernick sitting and that kind of protest and the conversation that might start.
I just think that for me, the reason it's in the same category is there's going to be people that are going to risk their lives for our country. There's police officers that risk their lives every day. There's military that, you know, go out to war. And I just feel that, you know, they go hand in hand. And without the one, you cannot have the other. And my daughter might grow up one day and want to be a police officer, want to be in the military. These children today, they're not going to want to be. Who's going to defend our country? Who's going to defend our families? Nothing's perfect, but not doing that, I think it was the wrong message. If he wanted to make a statement or say something at another point in time, this is a free country, but doing that on national television for everyone to see sends the wrong message.
Karen,
that's my strong opinion.
Thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it, and do call us again. Morgan, you wanted to react?
Yes, definitely. First, I thank the caller for giving me her input on it. I respectfully disagree with that for many reasons. One of the reasons is that I think it's a very slippery slope to try to tell a marginalized person the way in which he or she should react to the powers that may be, the ways in which they feel stigmatized in this country. And I think also the reason why Colin did it on national television is because for the reason that you said, he wanted people to see him. You wanted people, millions of viewers, to see, despite the fact that I have all this money, despite the fact that I have all this prestige, I am still seen as less of a human being to many people. And I'm going to make a statement on it, and you're going to remember it, which is why we're talking about it today. I think in terms of setting a bad example for children, for which children? Because growing up, if I didn't want to stand for the national anthem, if I didn't want to put a hand over my heart, I never had any black woman or man tell me that you better do it, you better do that, because they understood why that the implications that may be for why I wouldn't do that, because we have these sort of conversations all the time. So it's like being a good role model by being silent. I should be silent about oppression that's happening. I should be silent about inequalities and speaking up about it. I don't know if that's good for the next generation's children, that the next time that someone has an issue with something that they should be silent about. They should be more meek and should be more modest. And there's a right way to revolt. There is no right way to revolt, that people protest in many different ways. And I think that is also an issue, to not see the multiplicity of just airing out all of these pent up feelings. And I think when you look at Colin's timeline on Twitter, you see that it's no surprise that he did this. All you see are links about white supremacy, about racial policing, police brutality. It's no surprise. So he was already being vocal. It's just like, I don't understand the sort of concept of like, it was appalling that he did it on TV. Where else would he have done it, where he would have seen so many people react to
well,
and expose that?
I think Karen's argument is that there's a time and a place. So I'm guessing she would say, yeah, if he wants to tweet out his opinions in that respect on his Twitter feed, great. Standing for the national anthem, if I heard her correctly,
right,
is this moment of unity where we are all in it together to respect kind of the fundamental togetherness of what the ideals of this country are even supposed to be. And
right,
then, you know, and then go make your political views known in other contexts than that. Did you hear her say she's afraid that nobody's going to grow up and go into the military to defend this country or go to the police force because we're all going to be so poisoned to think, it's generally a negative thing, this country.
Rather than
it's a generally positive thing and here we all are, or it's a generally mixed thing, but here we all are. And let's have that moment of unity.
Right. And I think the thing is like, there is a time and a place to also talk about fundamental ideals. Ideals are reserved for the textbook. We're talking about real life here. We're talking about the ways in which we are different from each other. And we see that every time we turn on the television, every time we listen to a radio station. And so it's one of those situations where it's like, I don't mind us being together. Ideally, I would love for us to be together. But in order for us to be together, we have to understand each other's differences. We can't try to take a large brush and make it seem like we're all on the same platform, we're all on the same plane. And that also falls into the rhetoric of colorblindness. And so that's also dangerous as well. It's like, okay, let's all be together, but understand our differences first and try not to silence people who have been historically silenced for centuries when they have the moment to speak up about something. And I think also to add on to your point about Twitter, yeah, I mean, maybe some people think it was appropriate for him to put on Twitter, but also understand that we're seeing two-dimensional people on Twitter. People are two-dimensional there. When you're in front of a television, when you're not standing up for the national anthem, now you're considered a full person now. You're not hiding behind 140 characters and retweets. So it definitely has more of a potent message. That is one of the reasons why we're talking about it today. And we weren't talking about it 2 weeks ago when he was retweeting things about white supremacy.
Linda in Princeton, you're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Oh, good morning, Brian, and to your guest. Morgan, is it?
Yes.
Yes. By the way, just really quickly, before I make my main point, in the 1968 Olympic Games, a large part of the protest by the three athletes had to do with the fact that the Federal District Police in Mexico had killed 300-plus students in the immediate past in student protests in Mexico City. That was part of why they did what they did. That was sort of hushed up. The main point I wanted to make was, and I agree with everything Morgan has said and the caller, Deborah, I have a question and then a comment. Why on earth are we playing the national anthem before sporting events? It seems obscene to me, given people's reverence for the flag, that it would be involved in a money-making proposition and obscenely high profits by the owners. The second thing is, I have sat during many town council meetings in Princeton with our 90-year-old former mayor, who was the first black mayor of Princeton, who will not stand for the Pledge of Allegiance at the beginning of these meetings, and I will sit in the back with him and we will hold hands, because I do not believe in being coerced into showing my patriotism. I carry it in my heart.
Linda, thank you very much. Hey, Morgan, have you looked into this? Why do you think we do this at sporting events in the first place? I mean, you know, whether we say it's obscene because it's money-making, well, a lot of things are money-making, but sports is showbiz, basically, right? And we don't militarize or explicitly patriotize movies or plays or concerts, but we do it with ball games, which are, in a way, as far as the spectators are concerned, just another kind of entertainment. Have you ever wondered why? Mm-hmm.
I haven't. I mean, when the caller asked that question, I was like, oh, wow, why do we do that? I think there's a lot of traditions that we need to unpack and consider. But I think even when we talk about like the Olympics, for example, where there was so much patriotism happening, so much support for America and the whole concept of American exceptionalism. It's like, yeah, like, we're America, we're exceptional, we're, you know, we're here, we're big, you know. And I think, I don't know, like, maybe we play the national anthem to just remind people just how great we are. I have no idea.
Like, you know, I saw one comment on a website from somebody who said it's actually different in that person's view at the Olympics, because in the Olympics, everybody is there explicitly representing their country. But when you're at a sporting event, and in a way, I guess a sporting event is different from other entertainment in that you are representing your place, you know. But then,
Absolutely. But then
we should have the San Francisco flag flying over the 49ers games and things like that. We don't do that, but it's, you know, that it's different on the domestic level. What does it actually have to do with revering or respecting the government or the military in the first place? I read, because I was curious about this morning, maybe you'll find this interesting too. I read that the Star Spangled Banner was first played at a sporting event in the seventh inning stretch of a baseball game in 1918, because it was the height of carnage in World War One, and everybody was really becoming aware at that time of just how many thousands of people were being killed in that horrible war, and then somehow it became permanent.
Right.
So that's a little historical background. Let's take one more call. Tommy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tommy.
I'm here from Republic, Missouri, visiting, dropping my daughter off at college, and I caught your show today.
I'm so glad
and
you tuned in.
And I wanted to say that
what do tourists do in New York? They listen to the Brian Lehrer Show. Anyway, Tommy, hi.
I am visiting here, like I said. I am Native American. I'm a member of the Cherokee Tribe of Oklahoma. And honestly, there's been no group of people more oppressed than the Cherokee Nation. There is nobody that has gone through more than we did with the Trail of Tears, the reservation system, taking of our lands after the Confederate and Union War, the Civil War. Anyway, that being said, no argument here. Yeah, well, that being said, we start every powwow with a flag ceremony. We pledge to the flag.
The American flag.
We honor the flag. The reason we do that is the flag stands for more than oppression. It stands for more than the military. It stands for freedoms that came out of the Age of Enlightenment. And one of those freedoms happens to be freedom of speech, which is exactly what this NFL player... Excuse me, I'm out of breath.
That's okay.
I just ran a couple of blocks.
Well, it's both of those things. Go ahead.
Anyway, the First Amendment is what he was exercising. That's what the flag stands for. So even though I personally do not agree with his decision, I think he had every right to do it, and I support his decision.
Yeah, and nobody's saying he doesn't have a First Amendment right to do it. But it's interesting, because it sounds like, Tommy, you feel strongly on both sides of this. That A, he shouldn't be killed in the media too much for doing it, because he's expressing his free speech rights.
And
but at the same time, that you don't actually agree with his expression. With the way he did it.
I don't agree with his expression. I would go about it a different way, because I see the flag as something more than a symbol of oppression, more than a symbol of the military. It stands for so much more. So that is why I personally do not agree with it.
Right.
But overall, I would come down on the First Amendment side and choose that freedom and honor the fact that he did that. And I don't make fun of him, because he was just doing what this country was founded for us to do.
Tommy, thanks so much. And good luck to your daughter. You said you brought your daughter to New York to go to college.
Yes,
that's why you're here?
Yes.
Which school?
Columbia.
That's going to be a little different than living in Missouri, right?
No, it's going to be very different than Missouri, but she's going to have the time of her life here, work hard, and learn much.
That's great. Congratulations to you and to her. And I really appreciate you taking a few minutes while you were visiting to call in.
Thank you. I appreciate your show today. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. So, Morgan, I guess we'll leave it there, except maybe to follow up on her last point about the First Amendment. I think, you know, at least there's consensus on that across the political spectrum, that he has the constitutional right to do it. People still also have the constitutional right to criticize what he did if they find it worthy of criticism. What do you think is going to happen to him? Do you think that his performance, and for people who don't know the sports context, he was a big star. He's become more of a marginal player. I guess there's a chance that he would get cut from the team anyway before they start the regular season. Do you think this will affect that?
I'm not sure. I think one of the things that I've been doing these past couple of days, I've just been speculating. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he were to lose endorsements, or if he had potential endorsers, they'd be like, oh, we don't want to touch this guy. I'm worried about when he puts his helmet on and goes out on the field, and when he's about to play, are there going to be other teammates who, or not teammates, the opponents who yell racial slurs at him while he's trying to just play the game? Those are the things that I sort of worry about. In terms of whether or not he's going to be cut, I'm not sure, because we also live in the digital age where a lot of movements have started on the internet and have been started by Black women. And so they're very powerful. And so, especially on Twitter. So it's like, I don't know if there's even a suspicion that he might be cut, then you might see some immense mobilization efforts in the days to come.
You know, it would be really outrageous to me if he was cut for non-football reasons relating to this, while that player on the Giants is retained after his domestic violence, when the team made an official statement that whatever decision they make with him will be purely for football reasons.
Right. And so that's the thing, I think, and I don't want to spend too much time, but I think we need to talk about aggression, where and what it is directed and for what purpose. So when we talk about NFL and its relation to domestic violence, it's very easy to have those conversations because we see how they translate into one another. But when we talk about NFL players, specifically Black NFL players, and the way that they sort of exert their aggression towards white supremacy, towards corrupt police force, and all of a sudden that's a problem because it affects the power of other people, the people who are predominantly in those stands. So it's like, that's what we have to discuss, these all of these sort of intersections that are colliding and crashing with one another.
Well, we could do this all day, but we have other other topics to address. So come back and talk to us again.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Morgan Jenkins, who has an article in Rolling Stone now called What Colin Kaepernick's National Anthem Protest Tells Us About America. And thanks to all of you for your calls from so many different points of view. And keep tweeting at Brian Lehrer. And we'll come back in a minute and give you the latest on the EpiPen price gouging. Stay with us.